7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Howdy, Croc Nation. Dr. Tom Iannelli here with you with another amazing Croc podcast. But this is not just amazing because of me. It is not amazing because of Angel. It's amazing because of you guys. And actually, for one other reason. Angel Santana, have faith, let it begin. Today is going to be a wonderful podcast, reconnecting with an old friend. What say you, Angel?
Listen, there's a phrase that I love to live by. When you meet somebody and they have touched your life or has changed the industry, as we know it here at the Croc Nation, and we can say that person is returning, that makes everything fit. We'll use a baseball analogy, like a glove. And there's no one better than the guest that we have here today.
Absolutely. And now we're going to be using a lot of baseball analogies today as well. I am pleased as punch and honored and privileged to have our friend, Professor Len Berry here with us. And we're going to do something unprecedented, Angel. We are going to take what I feel is probably one of his most comprehensive articles. I call it his opus, Reclaiming Healthcare, Healing Mission for a Sustainable Future. And we are going to cut it into three parts and we're going to make it into a module. That's how important I think that this article is. And I just want to mention that this was published this year, volume 27 in the Journal of Service Research. Main author, Len Berry, along with his colleagues, and I'm going to mess up their names, but Yadav and Mike Hole. And we're going to be talking about this article. But before we do anything, we are going to welcome Len, and we're going to welcome him in the way that I do what I do, that voodoo, and that's embarrass our guests. So that is my privilege as the primary host of this podcast. Angel, do I have your permission?
I tell the Croc Nation, this one is one for the book. So make sure you just strap on your seatbelts. The Croc Nation jet is ready to take off.
There you go. So as I said, Dr. Professor Leonard Berry, he has a CV probably as long as a Russian novel. He is the University Distinguished Professor of Marketing and the Regents Professor, the M.B. Zale Chair in Retailing and Marketing Leadership at Texas A&M and at the Mays Business School. I'm going to do something a little different. I'm not going to go through his whole CV. I'm going to make it a little more personalized, but I did want to hit a couple of highlights. So obviously I mentioned his importance to the University of Texas A&M and the Mays Business School. He has published 13 books. In his little blurb that his secretary gave me, it mentions that he's the author of numerous academic articles. I'm going to have to say, I would have to say uncountable academic articles, an invited lecturer throughout the world, obviously, the Chef Gold Medal winner, William Wilkie Marketing for a Better World Award, Arizona State University's Carey School of Business Hall of Fame, and lifetime achievement at Texas A&M. I want to say something that's really profound and tells it all. Dr. Berry has the distinction of being the most frequently cited author in the Texas A&M University system. Really an honor to have Len, but I am going to take it a little further. Angel, I don't know if you've ever been to the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Absolutely.
But when you walk into the Hall of Fame, and I think I used this analogy before when Len came on, but you have all the memorabilia and you have all of the, the balls and the jerseys and the uniforms and the gloves and the baseball cards and the whole thing. But that's not really what the Cooperstown Hall of Fame is. It's when you walk into that wing where all of the beautiful bronze busts are of the Hall of Famers. And there's hundreds of them and they're all distinguished and they all deserve a place in that rarefied air. But I've even sent an email to the Baseball Hall of Fame saying that you have your Hall of Famers, but then you have your gods. You have the immortals. You have Babe Ruth. You have Lou Gehrig. You have Ty Cobb. You have Willie Mays. You have Hank Aaron. And I really believe that Len is in that rarefied air of the immortals when it comes to healthcare. And I'm going to go one step further, and this is not hyperbola, Len. This is actually the way I feel. There have been two men that I have looked at with such great respect and admiration. And I'm going to say the first one was it was a professor that I had, a teacher that I had in high school. His name was Father Tom, and I went to a technical high school in pretty much the guts and the abscess of downtown Paterson, New Jersey. And Father Tom was teaching me in the early 1970s, and he was teaching me about computers and electronics, and he knew so much, and he was smarter than Bill Gates, and he was smarter than Steve Jobs put together, and he could have made billions and billions of dollars, and he should have made billions and billions of dollars, but he decided to devote his life to the Lord and to teach young men crafts and trade so they can have a good life. And Len, you fit right there with Father Tom. You really could have been Madison Avenue. You could have been a billionaire 10 times over. You could have basically done anything you wanted in your with your mind and with your abilities, but you decided against it. Instead, you became a selfless. You became a teacher. You became an architect for a better world. And the collaborators that you work with currently are at the highest level of influence for the future of healthcare. And Raina Audish comes to mind immediately, as well as many others. And your legacy will continue. Angel and I were honored to have Sanjay on the podcast a few weeks ago. What an amazing young man. And again, you are shaping him into another Len Berry. And I think I expect nothing but greatness and amazing things from him, as well as many other of the young students that you're dealing with. And then lastly, to end the embarrassment, Len, I want to say that to collaborate with Len Berry is one of the most delightful experiences a person can have. He is the epitome of a gentle scholar. He's an exemplary colleague. He is kind. He is generous. He brings you in as a collaborator, not as a friend, but as a family member. And I feel like I'm part of his family. I get cards every holiday with pictures of his beautiful family. He is a friend. He is a friend to the Croc Podcast. He agreed to come on the po Croc Podcast 4 years ago when we were just starting and we were trying to figure out just the definition the wording of the term survivorship. And now he comes back 4 years later, where I'm hoping we're 4 years a bit wiser. And without further ado, Len Berry, welcome.
Wow. Well, thank you, Tom. You did thoroughly embarrass me. You were su successful in doing that. I've never had an introduction like that. I don't believe ever in my career. I've had many nice introductions, but you're in first place now in introductions. So thank you, my friend, and thank you, Angel. It's just a pleasure to work with both of you. You two do such a good job on your podcast, and it's my privilege to be your guest today.
Thank you, Len. And I want to just do a quick broad brush on the article itself. So, as I said, this is a, as a physician, I'm required to read and keep up with my craft, and I read a lot of review articles. But this is not a review article. As I said, I believe this is your opus. I call it Len's greatest hits, almost as if you were going to, buy Simon and Garfunkel's greatest hits. This is Len's greatest hits. And when I was reading the article, I'm saying, hey, Angel, we did a module on this. We did a podcast on this. And it was almost like bringing together all of these great ideas and pointing out all of the issues, and not only pointing them out, Angel, but coming up with solutions. And beyond that, I want to let everybody know, our survivor thrivers and our healthcare givers out there, that this is, a generalized article about healthcare and the ills of healthcare and the ills of healthcare. But really, it's very relatable to cancer patients and survivor thrivers. But to everyone, because we're all going to have to take a seat in that chair. We're all going to be patients sooner or later. So when I look at this article, guys, the adjectives that come to my mind, I use the word dense. I wrote this down. It's rich. It's dense. It's comprehensive. I feel like I'm on a planet, and the gravity on this planet is like 10 times greater than the gravity on Earth, because I read it about 17 times, and every time I read it, I get more out of it. And Len, as a pure clinician, you know, it's always a challenge for me to read articles about public health and public policy. My wife happens to have a doctorate in public health, and when she talks, I have no idea what she's saying. But when you and your co-authors, when you talk about public health, and as it relates to the healthcare system, it's very relatable, and I'm able to really follow it, and it's so well written, and then I guess what I was going to say, and very clear to me, and lastly, Angel and I, we sit in the foxhole, but we don't just sit in the foxhole of modern warfare. We sit in the foxhole of like a World War I foxhole, where we're shooting one bullet at a time. You know, your career, Len, your work has transcended local and regional influence. You are truly a global influencer of healthcare, and for that we are grateful. So no more embarrassment. I want you to just comment just briefly about the article, and to give you know, some accolades to your co-authors.
Yes, well, thank you again, Tom. So this article is probably the most challenging article, or certainly in the top three, that I've worked on in my entire career, because what we wanted to do is we wanted to talk about the relationship between healing, which we've lost track of in healthcare. Healing should be the primary mission of healthcare, but we're straying from that in many ways for many reasons. And so we wanted to write, my co-authors and I, Manjit Yadav, who is a colleague of mine at Mays Business School, and Dr. Michael Hull, who is a pediatrician, but works primarily with serving the poor, low-income kids who have no other option, who are sick. And he's a professor at the University of Texas in Austin, and he's affiliated with the Dell Medical School there in Austin. But this year, he's a White House fellow. And actually, Sanjay, who you mentioned, who's my former student, I'm so proud of him, and he's now in his second year, finishing his second year of medical school at Mount Sinai in New York City. Sanjay and I visited Dr. Hull in Washington, D.C. About a month ago for just reconnecting, because Sanjay and I have worked with him on other papers, but also to tour the White House. He gave us a personal tour of the White House where he's working this year. And so Michael Hull is a co-author on this, what you call an opus. But basically, back to the article itself, what the three of us wanted to do is we wanted to write an article about how do we sustain the mission of healthcare, which is healing. And by healing, we mean more than physical healing. We also mean emotional healing, spiritual healing, whole person healing. Oftentimes, physicians are confronted with the realism of a patient who cannot be cured of their illness, but can be helped greatly by different forms of healing than physical healing, by pain control, by helping patients manage their emotional, their fear, mitigating their fear. And so there are many forms of healing beyond just physical healing, and they become particularly important when patients have serious disease, when they're afraid, when they're in pain, when they're uncertain about their future, when they're worried about their family's finances because of the cost of healthcare and the inadequacies of healthcare insurance for those and other reasons. So this article is about how do we recommit healthcare to its true purpose, its true mission, which is healing, as I've described it. And so we focus on that, and we focus on the main contributor to true healing, which is trust. Trust promotes healing. Without trust, we can't really heal. Patients need to trust their clinicians. They need to trust their doctor. Their doctor needs to trust their patient. Patients need to trust the hospital, the health system where they're getting care. They need to trust. And in the article, we describe where trust comes from. And we describe two kinds of trust. One kind of trust, Tom, is what we call competence-influence trust. And competence-influence trust is trust that patients usually start with because they trust the doctor to know what a doctor is supposed to know. They trust a doctor to have the skills that a doctor is supposed to have. Unless something happens in their experience with the doctor and with the medical team that evaporates that trust, that destroys that trust.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Len. I appreciate that. And, you know, my wife is going to scream at me for interrupting you, but I will say the following. I'm going to get that in 1 second. I want to start actually from the beginning, and I want to look at the actual wording of the article, because when you are writing a scientific article, you need to have economy of words. So what really comes out at me is when you say reclaiming healthcare's healing mission for a sustainable future, the word that hits me in the head like a brick is sustainability. Mm-hmm. And can you just comment on that? Because we all know, people in the business know, that something's going to break. This is not sustainable, what we're doing now, especially in the United States.
Yes, yes. So for us to be able to sustain the healing mission, Tom, we need to better align the resources we devote to healthcare. We need to better align the incentives that we offer in healthcare to the people that perform healthcare, the hospitals, the clinics, the doctors, the nurses, and others. And we need to align the policy, particularly government policies, to drive healthcare improvement, to reconnect with the true mission of healthcare. And right now, healthcare resources, healthcare incentives, healthcare policies are misaligned. They're misaligned, they're out of sync. And so the first part of our article talks about those misalignments. Because without realigning resources for healthcare, policies for healthcare, incentives for healthcare, we cannot keep going. We're spending close to $4 trillion on healthcare in the U.S. today, Tom. $4 trillion.
Wow.
And we're wasting, and there's been a number of studies, peer-reviewed studies on this topic of waste in healthcare. We're wasting a minimum of 30 cents on every single dollar, up to 50 or 60 cents on every single dollar. So do the math. If we're spending close to $4 trillion on healthcare in America and all of its aspects, and we're wasting, let's say, let's be conservative, let's say we're wasting 40% of each dollar we spend on healthcare. What could we do with that 40%? We could make sure that everybody gets healthcare. Everybody gets good healthcare. Right now, that's not the case. And that's why, and we'll talk about that later in the podcast, we include healing the poor. because the poor are particularly disenfranchised from quality health care and from access to health care.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then it's so nicely written. You know, the two things I wanted that come to mind when I read your articles, that there's a recurring motif in all of your work. And that's to point out that when people discuss social problems, such as poverty and hunger and education and inequality and things like that, they tend to sort of take healthcare issues and put them on a different shelf. And I think you've always said that that was a paradox, that there's more of an intersection between social issues and healthcare. And that's the thing I think that has always been something that I've been inspired by in all of your writings. And in the introduction of this article, I think you say that beautifully. Would you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. And that's been a focus of my work and will continue to be a focus of my work, is the interconnection between quality healthcare and what we call the social determinants of health. So if you think about the main causes of illness, and if you think about the main opportunities to prevent illness, to forestall illness, to stabilize illness, to truly help people be healthy and to truly help people find well-being in their lives and happiness in their lives, the main factors in illness and in treating illness are really related to, but outside of, mainstream healthcare. It's homelessness, it's poverty, it's poor education, it's lack of affordability for healthy foods, it's lack of access to healthy food, it's the absence of a safe area to actually play for children. It's all of that and more. And traditionally in healthcare, we've seen all of these issues like poverty and poor education and substandard housing. We've seen these as non-healthcare issues, as outside of the purpose and mission of healthcare to be concerned about. But in fact, these are the issues that most prominently create illness and the need for healthcare. And so we bring all these issues together.
Yeah, it's so funny because you quote a paper from Ritter and Weber. You call these the wicked problems.
Yes.
And I think that's so nicely. I couldn't think of a better phrase. Len, you had mentioned before about the different alignments, because we are misaligned. And when you had said that, you know, basically a lack of alignment, you know, will, when alignment is present, it leads to balance, stability, continuity. And when it's absent or unaddressed, the imbalances get amplified, causing this vicious cycle. You had started to mention about resource alignment, incentive alignment, and policy alignment. Can you just briefly comment on that?
Sure. So in terms of misaligned resources, and the main body of the article, Tom, as you alluded to in your introduction, really focuses on how we can reallocate resources in healthcare. And we're going to talk about that later in the podcast. But we should be doing so much more with healthcare resources to help the poor live healthier, longer lives. We should be reallocating healthcare resources to better serve the elderly. I've long believed, and I've written about this quite a bit in my career, that one of the biggest failures in American healthcare is care for the elderly, particularly for the elderly that have multiple chronic diseases, particularly for the elderly that have life-limiting disease. Tom, as an oncologist, you work with these patients every single day. And also, we need to reallocate resources to better serve the healers to do the healing, better serve the nurses and the doctors and the ambulance drivers and everybody that's the technicians, everybody that's involved in healthcare. There's tremendous issues today with what's called burnout. We'll talk about that later in the podcast. But healing the healers is also where we need to spend more of our resources. So we've misaligned our resources. We're wasting so much of what we spend on healthcare. And then the incentives, Tom. The incentives are misaligned. We predominantly have what's called a fee-for-service incentive system, a payment system. So what that encourages is it encourages doing more. It doesn't necessarily encourage doing the right thing for the patient. It doesn't necessarily doing what matters most to the patient, but it does often encourage hospitals, clinics to do more, because the more they do, the more they're paid. So I'm a strong believer in taking a hard look at reinventing the way we pay for healthcare, to incentivize wellness care, to incentivize preventative care, to incentivize keeping people from getting sick in the first place as part of healthcare. We need to incentivize putting the care back into healthcare, Tom. We haven't done a good job of that. And then when we talk about aligning policies, this is where the government, not just the federal government, but state government, city government, government agencies come in terms of seeing to better ways to pay for healthcare, better ways to incentivize healthcare, better ways to align resources, the things that I briefly overviewed and things we're going to talk about in more depth later in the podcast.
Thank you, Len. That was beautiful. You know, Len, one of the things that I love about your writing and writings is the way you kind of know the clinician, you know us because you speak to us. Every time you write an article, you speak to numerous people that are in the trenches, in the foxholes, as I mentioned, and you kind of really have a good ear. You really hear what we're saying, because when we look at, you know, when you mentioned recommitting to the mission of healing, which is one of the emphases of the paper, I can kind of see myself here. I see, you know, the way I practice. And when you mentioned that a clinician could heal even when they cannot cure. So as an oncologist, there are many times when my cure is not necessarily a cure of their cancer, but maybe a cure of them as a patient, as a person, reassuring, calming, taking a frightened patient and trying to make them laugh or make them smile. You know, and sometimes it's not even about the cure. It could be about controlling pain. It could be about stopping or slowing down a disease process, or stopping a debilitating or costly treatment that's not going to help, as you mentioned several times already. And God, that's so what is going on, you know, for the people, you know, in the trenches that are caring. So I wanted to thank you for that and wanted to see if you can comment on that.
Well, thank you for thank you, Tom, for that comment. This, I think, is one of our greatest opportunities, Tom, in modern healthcare in this country and other countries for sure as well. But our focus in this paper is on the U.S. healthcare system, because that's a handful. And to try to go beyond the U.S. In a paper like this was simply not practical. But to truly understand in your shoes, as you do, Tom, because I know you, to truly understand the true meaning of healing, that it goes beyond cure, because many times we can't cure, but we can still heal. We can heal emotionally. We can help a patient and a family gravitate from a goal that is no longer possible, and that is a goal for remission of the cancer, for a cure of the cancer, to a different kind of hope that's very, very important and meaningful if a patient can gravitate to that different kind of hope. And that's a hope that's centered not on the future goal that's no longer possible of cure, but a patient is centered on the present. And we call that intrinsic hope. We write about it a little bit in this paper, and we've written about it in other papers, colleagues and I. And intrinsic hope is hope that's centered on today, when you have a life-limiting disease. And it's centered on today. It may be hope for a pain-free day. It may be hope for a visit from my grandchildren. It may be a hope for sunshine where I can be outside and be with nature. It may be a hope for my beloved team, whatever that team is, to win the big game today that I'm going to watch. And I'm going to watch in my home instead of in a hospital bed connected to all kinds of tubes. When I shouldn't be in a hospital bed, I should be at home. That's intrinsic hope that's centered on today. And then there's a third kind of hope, Tom. I'll finish with this, and that's a form of hope that we call freedom hope. And freedom hope was taught to me and one of my co-authors, Dr. Brad Stewart, by another co-author on a paper we wrote where hope when cure is not possible. And my other co-author, her name is Tracy, and she, like me, is a marketing professor. She lives in Australia, but she is an expert in healthcare. She studies it with the same fervor that I do. We write a lot of healthcare together. And Tracy was part of this article, and Dr. Stewart is a palliative care and hospice physician. And so he's worked with patients with life-limiting disease his entire career. And we were writing a paper about hope. And we asked Tracy to join us. And she taught us about this third kind of hope, taught both me and Dr. Stewart, freedom hope. Tracy, at the time we were writing the article, was the mother of a six-year-old boy who was a twin who was actively dying from metastatic cancer. And she wrote that paper with us and helped us through email, through various communications as we determined the content of the paper, as her son, one of her two twin sons, was dying. And based on the experience she'd had of months and months in the hospital, all the procedures, the surgeries, the chemotherapy, the stem cells transplant, everything that happened to her son. And she taught us a third kind of hope she called freedom. She said it's you get to a point where, as hard as it is, you have to let your child fly with the angels.
So powerful. And I am actually looking at the page where it was written, and what a courageous woman, and what a great lesson. And to be honest with you, Len, I see that in my clinic as well, in my practice. Sometimes, we go through years of this dance, and the dance makes people tired, and the gains are lessening, and the pain is heightening. And that intrinsic hope that we work on really does, I guess, segue into this freedom hope. And I think when we reach that point, and everybody is on the same page, and there's that permission, permission granted, not just from the patient and their families, but they also look to the healthcare providers to also bless that. And when everyone's on the same page, there is that freedom, and it does liberate everyone, not just the patient, not just their families, but the providers as well. And what a wonderful way to end part one of our three-part module. Angel, your thoughts on this first part?
You know, the one word that keeps repeating in my head is hope, and knowing that that this article, this paper, provides hope for so many people. It's just amazing to sit back and listen to what the possibilities could be and will be if people just provide that hope.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that. And Len, your thoughts?
Yeah, I wanted to thank Angel for that comment. Angel, the reason that I've become as a researcher, a health services researcher, I've become so interested in writing about and exploring and learning myself more about hope is because unless physicians, and particularly physicians like Tom, who are in oncology or heart disease, or who in other specialties where many of their patients are seriously ill, unless physicians in these particular medical specialties understand that there's multiple kinds of hope, unless they understand that, they're going to be less willing to tell patients the truth because they don't want patients to lose hope. And that's understandable. And it's very understandable on the part of physicians not wanting to gently but honestly inform the patient of the prognosis, because the physician doesn't want the patient to lose hope. But if you understand that there's more types of hope than just the hope for cure, then that provides a pathway for physicians in these very hard medical specialties where you do serve a lot of patients that are going to lose their life due to their illness. Then it provides a path, these physicians, Angel, to gently, in the right way, at the right time, level with the patient. So the patient can make the best decisions for herself or himself and the family. It's hard to make the best decision if you don't really know what's in front of you.
Here, here.
And that's going to be and our job. And we're going to next week, Angel, we're going to be tackling with Len three really, I think, the critical three aspects of, healthcare sustainability and a lot of the challenges. And we're going to be talking about how we could heal the poor, how we could heal the elderly, and how we could heal the healthcare worker. So Croc Nation, hold on to your seatbelts, fasten up. We will be back next week.
Don't forget, everyone, the Croc Podcast is available every single Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. There will be links in the description about all the things we discussed this today. And remember to join us next week for part two of this three-part series. We'll see you next week.